In the science of the mind, there is no point more thrilling than to notice, which I never noticed in schools, that in our endeavors to recall to memory something long forgotten, we often find ourselves upon the very verge of remembrance without being, in the end, able to remember. Under the intense scrutiny of Ladjia's eyes, I have felt the full knowledge and force of their expression and yet been unable to possess it, and have felt it leave me as so many other things have left. The letter half read, the bottle half drunk, finding in the commonest objects of the universe a circle of analogies, of metaphors for that expression, which have been willfully withheld from me, the access to the inner soul denied. Eyes blazed with the two glorious effulgence, pale fingers transparent waxen, the hue of the grave, blue veins upon the lofty forehead swelled and sunk impetuously with the tides of deep emotion, and I saw that she must die, that she was wrestling with the dark shadow. Her stern nature had impressed me with the belief that to her, death would come without its terrors, but not so. I groaned in anguish at the pitiable spectacle. I would have soothed, I would have reasoned, but she was amid the most convulsive of writhings. Oh, pitiful soul! Her voice more gentle, more low, and yet her words grew wilder of meaning. I reeled entranced to a melody more than mortal. She loved me, no doubt, and in her bosom, love reigned as no ordinary passion. But in death only was I impressed with the intensity of her affection. Her more than passionate devotion amounted to idolatry. How had I deserved to be so blessed and then cursed with the removal of my beloved upon the hour of her most delirious musings? In her more than womanly abandonment to love, all unmerited and unworthily bestowed, I came to realize the principle of her longing. It was yearning for life, an eager, intense desire for life, which was now fleeing so rapidly away as she returned solemnly to her bed of death. And I had no utterance capable of expressing it, except to say, man doth not yield to the angels, nor unto death utterly, save only through the weakness of his feeble will. I became wild with the excitement of an immoderate dose of opium. I saw her raising wine to her lips, or may have dreamed that I saw fall within a goblet, as if from some invisible spring in the atmosphere of the room, three or four large drops of a brilliant and ruby-colored fluid, falling while Ligeia lay in her bed of ebony, the bed of death with mine eyes riveted upon her body. Then came a moan, a sob low and gentle but once. I listened in superstitious terror, but heard it not again. I strained vision to see any motion in the corpse, but there was not the slightest perceptible. Yet I had heard the noise, and my whole soul was awakened within me. The red liquid fell, and I thought, Ligeia lives. And I felt my brain reel, my heart cease to beat, and my limbs go rigid where I sat. In extremity of horror, I heard a vague sound issuing from the region of the bed. Rushing to her, I distinctly saw a tremor upon the lips. I sprang to my feet and chafed and bathed the temples and hands, but in vain. All color fled, all pulsation ceased. Her lips resumed the expression of the dead, the icy hue, the sunken outline, and all the loathsome peculiarities of that which for many days had been the tenant of the tomb. And again I sank into visions of Ligeia, and again I heard a low sob. As I looked, she seemed to grow taller. What inexpressible madness seized me with that thought? I ran to touch her. Her head fell and her clothing crumbled, and there streamed forth huge masses of long, disheveled hair. It was blacker than the raven wings of midnight.